Welcome all. This is the February 27th, 2023 Finance and Administration Committee meeting, and we will now begin. This meeting is conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant Boardroom as a convenience to the public. Members of the public may alternatively participate remotely by using the toll-free call-in number or the Zoom webinar link provided in the committee packet, which is posted on the SCV Water website. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. For members of the public who are present and would like to comment, please complete these and submit a public comment card to the administrator to help expedite the process. To participate in public comment from a computer, tablet, or smartphone, please click the raised hand feature in Zoom or dial *9 when I announce the agenda item on which you wish to speak. When it is your turn to speak, please dial *6 to unmute. The procedure for tonight's meeting is as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments first from members attending in person and those attending remotely. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. These will be taken in order hands are raised. The committee then comes to a consensus to move this item to the board for consideration and or possible consent calendar item. Any PowerPoint presentation shown at tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCV Water website. We have here tonight Director Armitage, Director Gutzeit, Director Peterson, Director Colley is absent. With that, I will start out with item number one, the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand and follow my lead here. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay. Item number two of the agenda is... Do we have any public comments?
No public comment at this time.
Okay. Item three tonight will be presented by Rochelle Patterson and Courtney Mayall. recommend adopting a resolution to declare intent to reimburse capital expenditures for a groundwater treatment project using incentive, grant, and loan funds from the State Water Resources Control Board to comply with the Internal Revenue Service regulations. Rochelle?
Right, and for the presentation, Principal Engineer Brent Payne is gonna go through the presentation, but we'll be here to answer questions at the end.
Okay. Good evening, directors. My name is Brent Payne, Principal Engineer at SCV Water. The purpose of this presentation is to brief you on a grant application we're submitting to the state for a PFAS project. In particular, we're seeking your recommendation to the board for a resolution that's required by the state that would allow us to use state funds to reimburse ourselves for money spent on the project in accordance with certain IRS regulations. Next slide, please, Erica. This briefing relates to the LARC consolidation project and associated incentive funds. I might just say in the past, we've provided technical briefings to the E&O committee, but given the nature of this particular resolution, which is financial, we're bringing in it to the Finance and Administration Committee for yourselves for recommendations. So let me give you a little background, and I'll just start by saying these grant funds are available to us because we're consolidating two small disadvantaged communities into our system, and they're shown here on the map. One is the Los Angeles residential community, which we call LARC, and the other is the Lily of the Valley Mobile Village. Those are both shown in the sort of purple patchwork on the map. Upper right-hand corner is LARC, just past Vasquez Canyon Road, and then Lily of the Valley is kind of in the center of the page. Both of these communities are within our service area, but they're outside our distribution system. The red zone on this map in the lower left is our Catella pressure zone where our system ends. And so we'll build a new 12-inch pipeline in Bouquet Canyon Road that will extend about 1¾ miles to provide service to these communities. We'll provide water service by installing master meters in the public right-of-way in front of each of their properties. They will be relinquishing their domestic water supply permits with the county. That's part of the consolidation requirement. But they will continue to own and operate and maintain their on-site distribution systems that are after the master meter with a backflow device. Next slide, please. The state recognizes that small disadvantaged communities like LARC and Lily of the Valley may struggle with funding for water supply, as well as just keeping up with all the requirements of a public water system. So they offer grant and low interest loans to larger public water systems like SCV Water as an incentive for us to consolidate these communities into our system. Next slide, please. So let's take a look at the numbers for grants and loans. So the consolidation grant for the pipeline is $3.9 million. And this is to cover the cost of an 8-inch pipeline, which we've determined is the minimum size that's required to serve LARC and Lily of the Valley. SCV Water has opted to upsize this to a 12-inch pipeline so we can serve other existing residences that do rely on private wells along the pipeline route. We're budgeting $1.5 million in the upcoming fiscal year, 23-24, CIP, to pay for that incremental cost to upsize the pipeline. The incentive funds that we get is a $1.1 million grant and a $10 million in zero interest loan for a total of $11.1 million. The state lets us use these funds for one or more projects that we select from our CIP. And since the project we've selected may cost more than $11.1 million, the state's offering us a couple of other additional funding sources to supplement the incentive funds. In this case, because we're selecting a PFAS treatment project, the state's offering an additional $5 million grant from an emerging contaminants fund. And then they're also making available the low-interest state revolving loan, which is currently at 2.1% for this calendar year, 2023. Next slide, please. So I wanted to just mention or highlight the project that we've chosen for the incentive funds and why. We've selected PFAS treatment for three wells that are currently out of service due to elevated levels of PFAS, and that's wells T7, U4, and U6. Those wells are located along the Santa Clara River east of Bouquet Canyon Road, and they're shown in the blue dots on this map. We're going to provide centralized treatment at the Rio Vista intake pump station that's located on Bouquet Canyon Road, south of Newhall Ranch Road near the Lowe's and the In-N-Out Burger. We'll use an existing 16-inch pipeline that runs along Newhall Ranch Road from the wells over to the Rio Vista pump station to convey raw water to the site. We're also going to take this opportunity to upgrade the disinfection facilities that are at the Rio Vista intake pump station to replace with a new and improved disinfection system that will provide a more reliable and cost-efficient operation. Orlando Marino, I might mention, is our project manager leading this project, and he's available on this call if we have questions later. This project works well from the incentive funding program for two reasons, really. One is cost, and the second is schedule. So the total cost is estimated at $16.7 million, and that'll use all of the incentive grant and that emerging contaminant grant funds that are being made available, and most of the incentive loan funds. The second reason is schedule. So we just submitted the grant application to the state, and we expect their approval this fall. We're currently at 90% design phase, and we expect to start construction this fall after or once the state approves the financing package. So next slide, please. So to just recap briefly the Project One funding, so $7.6 million will be in grant funds, which is about 45% of that estimated total project cost, or nearly half, with the breakdown of $1.1 million incentive, $5 million emerging contaminants. And then I might also add that we're getting a $1.5 million grant from the Department of Water Resources. And that's thanks to Cheryl Fowler's work and application on our behalf here. So the remainder of the funding will be about $9 million from the 0% loan, or about 55% of the total cost. We've actually selected a second project, sort of looking forward, that'll also be a centralized PFAS treatment for three S wells. That project is just in the early stages of planning and environmental stage. So I'd say stay tuned for more. So, and the state funding is to be determined. So next slide, please. This shows the steps and schedule for our application and approval for Project One. We submitted the initial application to earmark funds back in June of 2021. The board approved an initial resolution in November of 2021 that gave staff authorization to apply for funds and prepare grant application packages. And as I mentioned, we just recently submitted the application for Project One. So all that now brings us to today's resolution, and the state requires a resolution from SCV Water that states for the record our intent to use the loan funds that we'll receive from the state to reimburse ourselves for money spent on the project prior to the state's approval of the financing agreement. The resolution is required to comply with certain IRS regulations. The money would have been spent on planning, environmental studies, and design. And the state's legal, I might add that the state's legal counsel has provided a resolution template with prescriptive language that we must use in order to comply with the IRS regulations. So the resolution in your packet, it includes that prescriptive language, and we added some upfront recitals that provides context related to the project. So our recommendation is going to be for the committee to recommend that the board adopt the resolution as it is. So next slide, please. So before I close, I just wanted to take the opportunity to give you a quick update on our consolidation project, the pipeline to LARC. So we did receive the finance agreement from the state in February 22, about a year ago. The first step was to send water service agreements to both LARC and Lily of the Valley, which we sent back in March of 2022. LARC was on board right away. Lily of the Valley took longer, actually much longer. But I'm happy to report through some recent efforts that Lily of the Valley is just about ready to sign that water service agreement, which means we'll finally be able to move forward. We will need a resolution to execute those water service agreements, which we plan to take to the ENO in April and the board in either later April or in May. And then we would plan to advertise for bids in June and award the construction for the pipeline this fall. So, and then construction would be completed in next year, by the year end 2024. And that brings me to the last slide. So this slide is that the Finance and Administration Committee recommends that the Board of Directors adopt a resolution that declares its official intent to reimburse capital expenditures paid prior to approval by the State Water Resources Control Board for the Groundwater Treatment Incentive Project 1, PFAS treatment and disinfection for T7, U4, and U6 wells using incentive grant and loan funds from the State Water Resources Control Board to comply with Treasury Regulation Section 1.150-2 and other Internal Revenue Service regulations. So kind of a mouthful there, sorry. But that concludes my presentation. I'll take it back to you, Chairman Peterson.
Thank you, Brent. Rochelle, you have anything to add?
No, I don't have anything to add other than I think Brent's been living and breathing this project for quite some time. So he is definitely the expert on this project, but it will allow us to seek $10 million of zero interest loans from the state.
Yes. So with that, do we have any comments?
Public comment at this time.
Okay. I'll open it up to the board members. Mm-hmm. Director Amritraj.
Thank you. So thank you, Mr. Payne, for your great presentation. And thank you to Ms. Patterson and Mr. Mail for the great write-up in the memo so we could do our reading ahead of time and be reminded of what I think is a win-win project here. So, you know, not only do we get to provide reliable water to areas of our community who don't currently have a reliable water source, but we also get the benefit of using these incentive funds. So for two very much needed projects to clean up our PFAS in our water. So I'm really glad to see that we can use these funds for two projects to remove PFAS from our groundwater. And I want to say thank you to Ms. Fowler for that additional $1.5 million in grant funding. As always, her hard work is appreciated in grant writing. I just had a couple questions. It does state that there is no cap on the state revolving fund loans. Can we stretch it to any to beyond those two projects at all to use those funds and take advantage of that? Or
we can, although I still believe they have to be used within a certain period of time, which is why that second round of PFAS mm-hmm. projects, we could potentially get the state revolving fund loans for those.
Okay.
And that would be at the interest rate in that particular year.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great.
And I might just jump in too. When we initially applied to earmark the funds back in 2021, we actually set it up on a program level approach where we called it groundwater contamination treatment so that we specifically could add projects as we go and the state could, you know, potentially provide, you know, additional funding sources as we go. So that was sort of strategic at the time.
I like that. That's very forward thinking. So that's awesome. And then a related question to that, though, is given the fact that there is a deficit this year in state funding, are we worried at all about Project 2 in terms of the guarantee of those funds?
I'm not sure, Brent, have you heard? I know they earmark $26 million, I believe, for these projects.
Actually, yeah, they earmarked initially $24 million, and then we updated it based on this. The, you know, where we're at today with cost estimates to 28.5. But I believe part of the state's funds and part of the reason we're doing like cross cutters for the environmental, and I didn't really talk about the CEQA, but we did cross cutter studies to make available federal funds. Part of that Infrastructure Act that at the federal level is passing down through the state as well. So it's not all state funds that we're going for here.
Okay. And then lastly, in the memo, it was mentioned that a cultural and biological study had to have been added. And so my question to that is, were there any negative statistics or significant findings related to that?
There were not.
Okay.
Yeah, those were completed. It's in the state's review. Orlando, did you want to comment? I know that you're working with the state in the review cycle right now.
Sure. Good evening, board members. Yes, the answer is Yeah, there is no significant impact to any of the biological resources or cultural resources in this area.
Thank you.
Director Gubsight?
Just a couple of questions. This may have been discussed before tonight with other committees because I hadn't heard these things, but on the LARC line and Lily of the Valley, we're upsizing it. You mentioned for people in between to potentially connect. Is the line large enough for people to the north to connect to if they want, if they can reach it?
So we were advised through legal counsel to avoid the potential for growth-induced impacts from the pipeline. So we specifically sized it to be able to serve existing developments, but not to add new.
This is interesting because I know, well, aside from the existing people that are north of there who I know are having problems, right, up towards Vasquez Canyon Road and stuff. I mean, everybody on that road is having problems, including existing ranches. But also, I remember, oh no, that was coming from the other side. Up Sierra, there was some stuff at Sierra and Vasquez that I think Santa Clarita was going to serve, but that would be a separate line. I guess I would come back and say, I mean, if an existing ranch, you know, half a mile up the road wanted to connect, is that?
So maybe let me clarify. So the 1¾ mile, it's about 9,600 feet of pipeline. Any residences or existing ranches and that sort of thing can connect to the pipeline. And that 12-inch upsize does allow for that.
Okay.
It's just if somebody wanted to build a new development.
right.
Yeah, then.
But anybody that's there now, it would.
Right. That. Yeah. And it stops at LARC. So it doesn't go north of LARC. So when you said north, that was what first came to mind. But no, any residences along the existing pipeline would be able to connect. And we're. Initially, the state said that they wouldn't fund any of those, so they would need to pay capacity fees and service lines and meters and the cost for that. We are currently in discussions on whether some of the residences themselves might be covered. So we asked them to kind of reconsider that, but right now they would have to pay capacity fees and cost for meters and service lines.
Okay.
Mr. Mayo?
Yeah, and just to clarify a little further, it's not saying that they wouldn't be able to connect to the 12-inch. Not everybody along that alignment would. What they would have to do is what any other development would have to do. They would have to go through the environmental process. They would have to go through an engineering process and determine what was required to provide service to them.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say for certain that the 12-inch is insufficient because I don't know their demands or their needs. Mm-hmm. And if it does meet their needs, then by all means, they can pay for the extension of the pipeline to serve their development. And as long as they're paying for all of that expansion and the capacity fees associated, then we would be able to tie them in. But they will have to follow that process.
Right. As probably would anybody in between as well, right? You're doing large
any expansion in between, but we did contemplate whether the existing customers as they sit with their, what would their existing demand and zoning would be, whether or not they could tie in if there's an existing home on those lots.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And then what happens to their wells, right? They lose their water permits that you said, but if they have existing wells that are dry, they just can't use those anymore if they're giving up their permits.
Yeah, so what I'll cover this one, Brent. They are giving up their domestic permit, so they can no longer use the well for domestic purposes. They are not required to abandon the well. They are allowed to continue to use it for irrigation or other purposes, but it has to be completely disconnected from the system. And obviously we have to have a backflow device on any of our master meters serving those communities.
Okay. And two more questions. What, briefly, a couple sentences, what disinfection upgrade are you planning? What exactly is that? Change of chemical or something else?
Orlando, you want to cover that one? Probably can concisely say it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're putting in a chloramine system. Okay. Basically, right now we have a bulk delivery system there that's just costly and inefficient. So we're bringing that up to be more efficient for us.
So it's the kind that makes chloramine on site?
Yes.
Okay. And then last question. So this seems like a great deal to have these other projects available. Is there some, other than the total dollar amount, is there a limit? I mean, since we're connecting Lilia Valley and Lark, how many times can we keep adding projects to this? Is it dollar cap or time cap? It's obviously not directly related to the Lark and the Valley project.
Actually, there must be yes some. And no. The incentive grant and loan was tied to the number of connections that Lark and Lily of the Valley have. 182 okay. connections really at Lily of the Valley, and I think number of buildings at Lark, which was 22 buildings. So that's the 1.1 million really came. Was based on that. The loan was based on the consolidation of these two communities. But then in addition, the additional funds like the emerging contaminants,
right.
The state revolving fund, those are the ones that I think we can still add to.
But that's not, I guess what I'm saying is that's not infinite. We can't keep using them forever. It sounds like there's a dollar cap. Is there a time cap as well, within a certain number of years of this connection, we're eligible to use those funds, incentive funds?
Yeah, we're supposed to complete the construction in 3 years from the financing agreement, but given the, and so we should be within that.
Okay. All right.
This project dates back a number of years, being before my time on the engineering committee, but I think it's really a worthwhile project. I'm glad that the agency is helping out to accomplish this with the state funding mechanisms in place. And of course, it takes time because I think I looked at it back in 2015 to do something. And somebody asked me to do that as a part of the community involvement I have. And I think it's a worthwhile project. And now the finance committee has a chance to approve it also. So with that, do we wish to do this by consent? Okay, we'll put it on the consent calendar then.
The additional request that we would make, we were looking at the timing of this, and we didn't have that set up. We were originally looking to go to engineering committee and revised it to come to finance committee because this is the more appropriate committee to approving a financing of a project. But we had it for the April 4th board meeting, and we would like to advance that. We have an opportunity through talking at agenda planning to advance it to next week's board meeting. And especially since it's on consent, I'd like to move it to that board meeting if possible.
That'd be fine with me.
Thank you.
Yes. All right. Thank you. Okay. Item number 4 is review of the ratepayer assistance pilot program to be presented by Rochelle.
So at last month's committee meeting, the committee reviewed a presentation on the ratepayer assistance programs that we had located, and staff was directed to develop a ratepayer assistance pilot program. The policy describes eligibility requirements for the program. Customers must demonstrate a genuine need for financial support. The criteria for eligibility will be enrollment into the CARE program, which is the California Alternate Rates for Energy, through Southern California Edison or Southern California Gas. And eligibility for the CARE program is based on income, household size, and other factors that may impact a household's ability to pay utility bills. The program will be open to customers who are over the age of 62, permanently disabled, or a veteran who meets the eligibility requirements. The program will be designed to be user-friendly, and the internal process has been discussed, and our customer service manager, Kathleen Wilson, is very familiar with the internal process, as she was also the customer service manager of Valencia Water Company when they had the low income ratepayer assistance program. The application process will be streamlined, and assistance will be available to help customers complete their applications if needed. And based on the survey results, the committee agreed on a credit of $10 per month off of the fixed monthly charge, and proposed limiting the assistance fund to $100,000 on an annual basis for a period of up to 3 years. And to comply with Proposition 218, identified non-rate revenues such as cell tower lease revenues, rental income, or property taxes. The amount of funding would be approved through the budget process each year and may be increased or decreased on an annual basis. Also in the policy, if it is projected by agency staff that there will be available funds in the assistance fund after processing the priority group applications, the assistance fund will be open to all eligible customers meeting the qualifying criteria as established in the policy. Staff's recommendation is that the Finance Administration Committee recommend to the Board of Directors to approve the pilot ratepayer assistance program. And this concludes my report. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Erica, do we have any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
Thank you.
Mr. Armitage.
Thank you. So thank you for the memo and thank you for the presentation, Ms. Patterson. I think this is a great consolidation of kind of the somewhat lengthy discussion we had last time about it and talking about the various options. So thank you for that. I'm wondering, when it goes to the full board, can we include just a little bit of language about a reminder that Valencia used to have a ratepayer assistance program too? I think that's a good piece of information to include as well. And I don't know if you want to, there's any like statistics we can throw in there to show that people did use that program. I think that might be helpful. So I know one of the things we talked about was like a donation type program, but I'm sensing that staff didn't like that option. And so we kind of took it off the table. Okay. And I don't know if we want to mention that as well in the memo, or maybe we just bring it up in discussion, because I just think it's important for the other members who have some concerns about the feelings of subsidizing, some customers subsidizing others, you know, that we had that discussion, but staff preferred to do it using the funding streams that you identified in here. Just one question about the draft policy. I don't see, and maybe I missed it, under 3.0, under assistance, where it describes the $10 monthly credit, I don't see that it specifies fixed cost, and I think that's important. And if I miss it, I apologize, disregard what I'm saying. But I do think it's important to specify that the $10 would come off the fixed cost, because it still incentivizes the customers to further reduce their bill by saving water. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. And then also that, but that staff didn't like the direct donation, it would just be hard to manage a direct donation if somebody sends in a check and say, this is for the ratepayer assistance program, that would be easy to do. But if somebody sends it in, like they roll up their check when they send it in, we would be able to separate those. On the credit cards, there is a roll-up feature to the next dollar, but that's still only hitting a portion of our customers. So there are things that we can do. It would just be a little bit harder to manage, and it would be like one way across the board. But yeah, there are options.
Just another thought on that, too, is I think part of the idea of if we do go forward with this over the next 3 years, is there are a couple different leveraging up concepts that were discussed. One was you know, the ability to have some place where people could make a donation from the community if they wished. Another was to continue to look for other community foundations or others, although right now they're probably helping people with their gas bills. But that idea could remain open, I think, and perhaps, you know, bolster the program. It just may not be a year one concept, but I think staff is intrigued, but also wants to make sure we launch what we think we can pull off and then build if possible.
Director Dusite?
Yeah, I actually think this is evolving quite well. And some of Mr. Stone's comments are helpful as well. First, one concern I had before that I want to confirm is addressed. And it looks like in section 4.2, when you say name and or service address on the Edison bill or SoCalGas has to reflect the customer's enrollment, I mentioned that a lot of times, particularly seniors, will have someone else having power of attorney for financial, but that would be a billing address and might be a different name. So the service address is for the, that's addressed in this section, right? So if, or service address, right. Okay. So if, yeah. And it, the service address would resolve the billing address issue. So that's good. And then just for the presentation, the reason I think this is good is I think it's a manageable trial run to see, you know, how this can be handled, how hard it is, especially if something goes through the state. Now that we have a number, can you estimate for the board presentation an administrative cost on the staff side? Like, can you estimate? Because before you said you had no idea how big this was going to be, so you couldn't provide an estimate. But, you know, estimated additional burden besides the $100,000. And then secondly, I really like the idea of, because this is so small, but if there's grants that we could get to even cover the $100,000 donations, you know, we'll have the skeleton or backbone set up, and then we could apply other things to this. So starting to like it more and more. I do want us to network on these community resources. So, you know, somebody goes to the gas company or Edison, that they're aware that we have it too. Similarly, if they come to us first, even if it's just a sentence to, you know, remember, check with your other utilities, or here's a link to community nonprofits that might help too. Whatever we can do, because there's a lot of pieces and ours is going to be this probably the smallest one. But it'll help. The gas bill is horrible right now. Oh my goodness. Okay. Thank you.
Well, I'm very in favor of moving ahead on this as a pilot program, because this is a learning experience for all the customer staff. Kathleen is very familiar with this process, as she's was at Valencia Water Company. I'm very familiar with it too because of my Valencia experience, along with my other PUC regulated water utility experience. It's a program that brings nice effects as we talk to our customers who are under the auspice of a large bill, per se. But one of the things that's going down your line, Director Dusite, there are community outlets for helping rates, ratepayers, the public that are going through situations of having difficulties paying their bills. In fact, District 36 is been getting constant every other week emails about their program out in that they're putting together out in the Palmdale area to come out there to see. You can make connection with those kind of groups mm-hmm. out there.
I see.
Yeah. And so they're promoting that with their customers in my area, that is. But with that, I think we probably should probably discuss this with the board. Mm-hmm. So with that, we'll move it on to the agenda. Which agenda are we going to put this on?
It's scheduled for April 18th.
Okay, thank you.
I do have one clarifying question, okay. which could lead to other discussions. when we were talking about direct donation, whether it's from customers or other companies or organizations, is the agency commitment not going to change from $100,000?
My personal initial thought would be that we cover $100,000, and if people donate part of that, then we don't up the $100,000. It would just offset it. Instead of coming out of property tax, it would come from the donation, and the property tax covers all of our other operating expenses. So I would. My thought is the agency would spend $100,000 or less a year, but that's maybe not what everybody else is thinking.
My opinion is that it's $100,000 of for a budget out of our existing, as it is recommended here, out of our existing rental lease agreements funds that we receive. If we increase it even more, then we're diving into capital projects, as it's been said before. As far as, I think if we reach that point of getting extra money, we can always talk about it again. That's my opinion anyway.
I mean, I agree. I think it's, especially since we don't quite know what the response will be in the community. I think if we just start with 100,000, if some of that is supplemented by donations and then we cover the gap, I think that's a good starting point. And then once we kind of learn and get the feel of what the response is in the community, you know, we can kind of have those discussions later. So, yeah.
And also what the game looks like. Especially coming back to the community, so let me feel that ends up that we're going to fund bill of water to distribute, you know, then that might change.
That might change in the future if some money comes through the state as a donation or some private foundations are discovered by our wonderful grant writing people, we can revisit it.
I just thought it might come up. So
yeah. So I think, you know, we can look for it, but maybe not initially. It's probably not going to be an issue right now.
All right.
So item five, recommend approval of a revised debt management policy.
Okay, so looking back at the meeting on August 15th, 2022, a revised debt management policy was introduced to the committee as the first step in identifying when it is appropriate to issue debt. The agency's overriding goal in issuing debt is to respond to and provide for the infrastructure, capital project, and other financing needs of the agency's water system, while ensuring that debt is issued and managed prudently in order to maintain a sound fiscal position and protect credit quality. Proposed revisions to that policy include a more defined introduction that would provide staff with guidance on when and on when not to consider or to consider issuing long-term debt. After a long discussion, the debt management policy revision was tabled to a future meeting in order for staff to develop and present funding examples and scenarios on ways to pay for our upwards of $700 million of capital projects over the next 10 years. Now that the board has approved our financing plan, staff is reintroducing the revisions to the debt management policy. There have been no changes, nor were any changes recommended by the committee when discussed in August. The revised policy expands the definition of debt financings to include federal or state programs or loans, such as the credit program through the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, Water Infrastructure and Finance Innovation Act, which is LIFIA, or the Clean Water State Revolving Fund Loan Program, which we just heard a portion of it from Brent. In addition, in section 4.12 was added to comply with government code section 8855 section K, which requires that the agency submit annual debt transparency reports for every outstanding debt until the debt is no longer outstanding. And government code section 5852.1, which requires the agency to provide good faith estimates in a public meeting prior to the issuance of debt. And as the report states, no new debt would be issued without thorough review and approval of the board of directors, as stated in the debt management policy. And staff's recommendation is that the Finance Administration Committee recommend the board of directors approve the attached revised debt management policy. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
Thank you. Director Armitage.
Actually, I don't have much to say. I mean, I read it. It just seems like it's kind of bringing it up to date to include all the things we've been talking about for what feels like a very long time. So no questions. Thank you.
Director Cusack, none? I don't have any questions either. So I think it's interesting that I was looking at the date when it was put together originally. It was 2018. So we have updated it now for the first time in 5 years. That's pretty good. So with that, should we put this on the consent calendar? Okay. With that, we move on. Item number 6 is the recommend approval of a resolution authorizing the issuance of one or more series of revenue bonds by the Upper Santa Clara Valley Joint Powers Authority, and 2, the execution of certain documents and other certain actions.
We have Jonathan Guz, an attorney at Stradling, Yoka, Carlson, and Roth, the firm that serves as the agency's bond counsel, to go through the legal documents in the packet and answer any specific questions. Just a couple slides.
Thank you, Rochelle. I think we can move on to the, and as noted, we serve as the agency's bond counsel. So I think we can move on to the next slide. So in the packet, there were a couple of resolutions. One resolution is a resolution of the agency. And in this resolution, it approves the issuance by the Santa Clara Valley Joint Powers Authority of certain revenue bonds. And that resolution sets forth parameters, not to exceed par amount that's currently $75 million, as well as certain parameters relating to the underwriter's discount, as well as the interest cost of the bonds that are to be sold. In addition to authorizing that transaction, there are several legal documents that the agency will be a party to, that forms that are substantially final are included with the resolution, and those are then approved. Just kind of going over what the agency resolution approves. The first document's the installment purchase agreement. And this is an agreement that the agency enters into with the authority. And this agreement sets forth an obligation on behalf of the agency to make installment payments, and then also identifies the source of funds for such payments, that being revenues generated by the district system, as well as some other revenues. It also sets forth certain covenants that the agency will need to abide by as long as the authority bonds are outstanding. Some of the key covenants are an additional bonds test, which, you know, requires certain thresholds that the agency will need to demonstrate in order to be able to incur additional indebtedness. There's also a rate covenant that establishes that the rates have to be set forth in the budget at a certain rate to allow for coverage, debt service coverage of a certain amount. And there's certain other covenants provided therein. And this allows for the installment payments to be, you know, transmitted to the authority. And then those payments will be applied then to the outstanding principal and interest as those amounts are coming due and paid to investors. Another agreement or certificate that the agency would be approving and then entering into in connection with the issuance of the bonds is the continuing disclosure certificate. And this certificate sets forth an obligation of the agency to provide updates to certain information. It's financial information and operating information. This will usually take the form of the audit of the agency, as well as updates to certain tables that provide information in the official statement, which is the document that's provided to investors in the bonds. There are also certain events that the agency will be required to provide notice of upon their occurrence, and that's consistent with federal securities law. The other agreement that the agency would be approving under the agency resolution would be the purchase of contract, and that's an agreement that is among the agency, the authority, and the underwriters, and that provides for the terms in which the underwriters will purchase the bonds from the authority and then ultimately, you know, sell them to investors. And then the agency resolution, it's noted in the text of the document, but there are good faith estimates that are required pursuant to state law to be provided and available to the public. And those will be provided in the staff report that accompanies the agency's packet that will be approving the resolution. Next slide, please. So in the authority resolution, the authority will be the entity that is actually issuing the bonds. They will be revenue bonds, and the payment stream, as noted in the prior slide, will be the installment payments that are provided by the agency. In the authority resolution, there are also parameters regarding the amounts not to exceed for authorization in terms of the issuance of the bonds, as well as certain mirror parameters as to the, you know, agency resolution with respect to underwriter's discount and the true interest cost. The authority, as a party to the purchase contract and the installment purchase agreement, they are also approving forms of those documents. And, you know, they're the same documents that I just summarized a moment ago. The additional document that the agency is not a party to, the authority is a party to, is the trust, the indenture of trust, which is between the authority and then the trustee for the bonds. And this document just kind of sets out the terms of the actual bonds that are sold to investors. In there, it has the source of payment. It has certain covenants. It also provides for key terms about the bonds after they price, that being the interest rate, the principal amount, the maturity dates, as well as the redemption provisions. And then also to comply with state law, the staff report that will accompany the agenda for the meeting of the authority that will approve the resolution will set forth those good faith estimates. And those are the documents that would be considered and approved in connection with the authority resolution. Does anyone have any questions?
Do you have any public comments on this item?
Oh, we do not have any public comments at this time.
All right. We can get into questions.
Director Gusite.
So we have a moment. And I've always wondered this, why the JPA, why is the JPA involved? Why can't SCV Water just do this directly? I'm sure there's a reason.
Oh, I'm sure John can explain it better, but there has to be two parties to issue revenue bonds.
Oh, well, that answers that. Unless there's some other deeper thing, but that.
There's a little bit of history with, I believe, and John probably knows this way better than I do, but I'll just quickly venture that I think the other method that public agencies have used is certificates of participation. Mm-hmm. And when the law was changed or created, that presented an opportunity for joint financing authorities to issue revenue bonds, that was more attractive in the markets. So there is a slight savings, maybe not so slight, but over time, it's been generally a little bit more favorable to issue those. And that's one of the questions that always comes up. Why do we have a financing authority? Why, you know, and our partner in the financing authority is Devil's Den, mm-hmm. which seems odd, but you need two entities to form a financing mm-hmm. authority. Mm-hmm. So the net effect of that is we continue to believe that there is some advantage to that vehicle from a rate standpoint.
Okay. All right.
And please correct me if I got that in any way wrong, because that's my understanding of it.
No, I think you hit the major points there.
Okay, good. I'm learning. Okay.
And continuing the legacy of Dan Mortensen, I will say that it is good to see that we had to outline the total cost, which I'll say is, you know, basically double what we're borrowing in the end. So I'm glad that that's disclosed. I didn't know that it was required, but I think I had that question way early on, and it's in there now. And then given that, is this eligible for refinancing or payoff at a certain point, or is this permanent?
Typically it's 10 years, but we'll be discussing that with the underwriter because they have some other ideas for financing. And I'm not sure if that 10-year mark is still there or not, because we're talking about maybe a shorter term maturity.
Okay.
But those will all be discussed in the later documents.
Okay. So at maturity, whatever that ends up being, we could either refinance or pay it off.
Well, most of them, if we have a 30-year term after 10 years, you could do a refinancing or pay it off.
Okay. All right. That was it for my questions.
Director Amatroj.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for the presentation. So this was super dense. I tried to tackle it. I tried to read the three attachments, aside from the resolution. The resolutions were a breeze compared to three attachments to read through. But, you know, it's filled with financial and legal jargon. So I guess since this is going to come in front of the board eventually, right, I'm wondering if I might take advantage of reaching out and asking some more questions between now and then as I continue to process this, because I feel like these are really expensive decisions, and I want to feel like I understand it when I'm voting on these issues. So, but a couple questions. One is, first of all, how was the law firm Stradling, Yoka, Carlson, and Ross selected?
They've been our bond counsel for decades, okay. I think. They were even bond counsel for Newhall. So.
Okay, thanks. And then has our general legal counsel reviewed these?
They have seen them, but we use the bond counsel for these types of documents.
Okay, so they don't, okay.
I think they do have a role in the legal disclosure section. They do review that to make sure that that's accurate and updated.
Okay.
So yeah, I was here till 10 o'clock on a Friday recently trying to get through that same packet. So
yeah,
I appreciate the effort that goes into that from a board member standpoint.
And then is there a role for the ratepayer advocate to also read these and give opinion on these?
Not really in their contract, because these aren't setting rates per se. These are financial instruments of borrowing.
Okay.
So, we don't currently have it set up that way.
Okay. And let me see. Is there anything else? I think that's it. Thank you.
Director Cusack.
Speaking of the board meeting, I just thought of one other question that might be helpful to, when this comes to the board, if we could briefly explain that why this is the best option for the money. If there's various ways to borrow, you mentioned that COPs are more expensive.
I think we covered that a couple, the last issuance, the big refi, we talked through that a little bit and had at least Robert or Laura confirm that that was still the trend in the market. I can't remember what they had a guesstimate of what that difference would be for the size of issuance at that time. So we could probably ask them to have that ready.
Yeah, just so that we know. Yeah. I mean, we've already established through the other board discussion that we're going to borrow the money, but just to confirm for everyone that this is the best way to go to borrow the money.
Okay.
Well, I try to read the document on my iPhone yesterday, only because my phone service and internet service went away due to the storm. But I did finally get to peruse it a little bit more thoroughly. One of the things is it is kind of a lot of legal stuff in there. But one of the things that I could not glean out of it when I was looking at it, is there some insurance requirements that we need to have in place in these bond situations, bonding, revenue bonds?
I'm not sure which type of insurance.
Any type of insurance.
I do recall, and maybe counsel can jump in, I do recall a section that referenced some insurance requirements, and it may have been the existing insurance that we have and maintaining that, but
I know that's in the official statement as well.
Yeah, I'll trail off and let that be answered.
There is a covenant to maintain insurance for the system. It's the same requirement that's been in place in the other financing, so it's not an additional requirement or any action that will need to be taken for this particular financing.
Okay, with that, that's all my questions. Of course, this will go to the board as an item for action. So, with that, any more comments from the board members? None. We'll move on. Okay. And let me rephrase that a little bit. We recommend this to the board of directors, okay. Correct, as a committee. Okay. Okay.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Item 7. Now we're talking about a nice thing. Review of the 2023-24 and fiscal year 2024-25 biennial budget calendar. I'm going to say that a couple of times.
This is just informational purposes. We present it every year prior to us beginning our budget cycle. So this, we are beginning our first year of our two-year biennial budget. The first year would be approved by the directors, and then the second year is conditionally approved. We always bring back the second year if we need any revisions for actual adoption. We've already underway. We've sent out already the expenses and capital expenditures to department heads to go over their budgets. They have a couple weeks to put those numbers together. We take them back. We analyze them. And then we have another meeting. So they have to justify any overages over 20%. So they have justification for those. So we can justify it to you guys. And then we have scheduled, there is a scheduled engineering operations committee meeting on April 6th, and they will discuss the capital plan. And then at the April 17th Finance Administration Committee, we will present the draft budget. We will also have a presentation of the capital plan as it was recommended last year. And that will, and if there are no changes to the budget at that time, then we can move it to the board, and that would be the board meeting of May 2nd. If there are minor changes that take a little bit extra time, but is still going to the board, we could still take it in on May 16th. Or if the Finance Administration Committee wants to see it one more time, and maybe it's not quite ready, we still have time to look at that in May and approve in June. So that is our proposed budget calendar this year. And there's no action on this item.
Any public comment on this item, Erica?
No public comment at this time.
Thank you. Director Kutsite.
I know that in the past, some board members expressed interest in a workshop or something like that on the budget. I didn't necessarily agree with that being on finance because I hear it a couple times. But can we at least make sure everybody on the board is aware when it will be discussed? I believe they can listen in to the meeting if they want to hear it, just, you know, so that it's in their face. If you want to hear the draft budget, here's your opportunities, you know, capital at engineering, probably full run through at finance on this date. If it comes back, coming back to finance on this day, just keep the other directors informed so they have the opportunity to listen.
And we try to, it's not necessarily a workshop, but it's more of a collaborative approach. So we will do that this year. So we, at least the full board hears all the capital pieces and then all of the rest of the budget pieces on the same night.
A longer presentation.
Yes.
All right, we can move on. Springtime coming soon. Item 8, recommend receiving and filing of the December 2022 financial report and mid-year fiscal year 2022-23 budget review, second quarter. Rochelle, please.
Yes. So we have a mid-year budget review on our calendar that we had every year, but then we started doing these quarterly reports. So it's pretty much the same. So our mid-year budget review is our second quarter. There are some minor changes when we do a mid-year budget review of what we would look at. But this presentation we'll incorporate both a few slides for the mid-year budget and then the second quarter expenses, the actual revenues and expenditures versus the budget. Next slide. And again, the second quarter ended in December. So some of this seems like a little bit old news, but these are some of the accomplishments in that quarter. So we had completed our audit. With no audit findings, we submitted our annual comprehensive financial report. We did complete the WIFIA letter of interest. We approved an employee manual for a flexible workplace program that was revised. We developed the internship program. And then a couple of contracts for the microwave upgrade project. Next slide. So when we look at our mid-year budget review, so the mid-year is slightly different than the second quarter financials. When we look at mid-year, it's a snapshot. In theory, we would have received 50% of our revenue and expended 50% of our expenses through December. But there are a few budget items that are budgeted monthly based on trend or expectation. So for instance, the trend for water sales shows that we receive approximately 61% of our revenue in the first 6 months of the fiscal year, as opposed to the last 6 months of the year. If we look at mid-year, we were slightly over budget by about 2%, receiving 52% of our water sales in the first part of the year, but we're actually tracking below our monthly expectation. We will see the budget versus actual change when we look at the second quarter report later in the presentation. But looking at the slide, looking at total water sales, we were about 52% at mid-year. So if we're looking at that mid-year, we look at that 50% column, we're kind of looking for variances. Our miscellaneous and late fee disconnects were about 28% at mid-year. We kind of attribute this to still a little bit remaining left over from COVID of disconnects. We also had a change of policy, which is when late fees and the amount of late fees, when they get charged. Property tax revenue, we received about 45% at mid-year. And this one's a little bit different too, because we trend is we usually receive about 40% of our property tax at the beginning of the year and about 60% in the second half of the year. Our facility and retail capacity fees received were approximately 8% at mid-year. And our PERC reimbursements, O&M and CIP, was $1.7 million, and that's about 19% at mid-year. So part of that, those PERC, O&M, and CIP is part of the Saugus replacement wells 3 and 4. And I think it's going now, but we're still talking about December and before. So next slide. This is just a graphic on the left shows the entire budget with all of the colors for the different types of revenue sources. The 50% there in the middle, and then we comparing our actuals through December on the very right bar graph. And we can see there was a little bit less in water sales. We got a little bit more in interest. Our facility capacity fees were a little less. So that it kind of weighs the boxes on our chart, but we're pretty close. Next slide. Just a couple detailed ones for our mid-year. So our total water sales revenue, this is where we see our total budget. It's about $90 million for water sales, what 50% of that would be, and where we're at through 12/31, which is 52%, so just slightly over. And then in the purple on the right, the 1% property tax, our total budget, what it would be at 50%, and then the revenue received, which is just slightly lower than the 50%. And then the bottom left in the gold color for facility capacity fees, you can see the revenue received through December. And then we added in the state water contract revenue on here, which is property tax. And we could see our budget and what 50% would be, and then the revenue. And this is the same property tax. It's still about 50 or 40% in the beginning of the year and 60% at the end of the year. Next slide. This is shown in your package, I think maybe page 108, I think it is, to see it bigger. But when we look at this, we look in the white column all the way to the right, percent of budget. So when we have our budget, we look at what our actuals were, and we're kind of looking around for what seems out of the norm of 50% when we're looking at mid-year. So some of the things we've talked about, which is our water sales, identified our miscellaneous fees and charges already. Our property tax, you could see, is 45%. So just shy of the 50. Our annexation reimbursements, though, are 102%. So we did receive some carrying costs from Tapia in December. So that's included here. And then we actually had an increase in our interest income. We're at 155%. And that's just, the change of the market. We had budgeted really low because that's what we knew back when we budgeted a year ago. So our overall, we're about 45%, so near that 50% target if we're looking at mid-year for our revenues. Next slide. This is the state water contract revenues, which is just the agency set property tax and some investment revenue, and that's about 44% mid-year. Next slide. So if we're looking at our mid-year expenses, again, looking at that 50% mark, our management expenses were about 29% at mid-year. Some of our perchlorate litigation legal expenses were a little lower than anticipated. We've seen some insurance recovery for some of those perchlorate costs. We have not yet seen the election bill yet. That usually comes in May, so that will reflect here. On water resources expenses, we're about 34% mid-year. We've just seen some lower conservation engagement when we look at our accounts, which accounts are low. Our engineering expenses were about 35% mid-year, and it looks like most of that is in professional services, and a big portion of that has to do with the master plan. Capital project expenditures, PAYGO, is about 18% at mid-year. We are attributing some of that to delays in timing, permits, contracts, acquisition of materials. We are seeing an uptick in committed costs, so that means that work is still continuing, but just at a little slower pace. Our water quality treatment and maintenance mid-year is slightly over. It's 58%, so about 8% more than that 50% mark. We have some timing delays in Edison invoices. And then we also had some reduction in our solar credits from when our solar field is operating about 85%. So we are not seeing as many solar credits as we were in previous years. And all the other departments' expenses seem to be within budget. Next slide. This is the same kind of graphic showing for the expenses, the full budget, what the 50% would be and what the actual expenses are through 12/31. Next slide. And this is just the detail of those. Still looking on the right-hand column, looking for anything that seems out of the norm for a 50%. And those are the ones that we identified already in management, water resources, engineering services. The one outlier here is the debt service at 71%, and that's primarily because we pay our principal payments in August and our interest payments in February for most of our debt issues. So we're about 32%, so definitely under in our expenses. Next slide. And this is for the state water contract expenses. We have our variable charge, and then we have our state water contract payments. We have some dues, which are annual, and some other small expenses. We're about 40% mid-year. Next slide. So here's when we get into the quarterly budget. So we're not looking at mid-year anymore, but our actuals for our second quarter. So overall for fiscal year 22-23, our total revenues, which are operating and non-operating, are $67 million, and we're about 11% under budget. That's about $8.3 million in our revenues. And that is primarily has to do with our reduction in water sales from conservation. Next slide. This is just a water sale graph in acre feet. So overall, year to date, our total water consumption was about 32,620 acre feet, but we had budgeted a projection of 32,620 acre feet, and a budget projection of 35,953. So we can see why we're under budget because we've actually sold less water than we had budgeted. Next slide. So here's just the water sales revenue by customer class. So our residential water sales were under budget by about 12%. That's about 3.6 million. Our commercial water sales were over budget by about 8%. Our landscaping irrigation was under budget by 27%, which is about 3.2 million. And all of the other water sales were under budget by about 10%, which equates to about 337,000. So in our number of billing connections that we added through December for fiscal year 22-23, so far has been 639 out of the 1,550 that's projected for the entire year. Next slide. Here's our 1% property tax. We received $13,520,000 out of about $11.9 million budget. And this is where I said that the mid-year is a little bit different than the quarter, because we do try to, when we try to budget for either when we receive or when we expend. Property taxes is one of those ones based on historical trend of when we can estimate when we may receive those property tax payments. So in October, November, we typically don't receive any. It kicks up in December, and then we'll get it mostly through the rest of the year. 40% of those revenues, again, are received in the first half of the year and about 60% in the second half. Next slide. Our facility capacity fees, we received a total of $526,000. The regional fees collected were $482,000 and $43,000, and the retail capacity fees out of a budget of $3,150,000. And these facility capacity fees are kind of annualized on a monthly basis. So it's, we just take our entire budget divided by 12, because we have no idea when we may receive those facility capacity fees. So we could have something booming maybe in the next few months, but not likely. Next slide. And this is just showing you where we have received those $482,000 of funds. If we can identify a large developer, we will include it here, and the one officer in the other column. Next slide. And here's our other revenues, include grants, reimbursements, sale leases, rental income, and investment revenues. Those all receive $5.4 million. We're approximately 31% over budget at $4.1 million. And a lot of that is attributed to that annexation payment from Tapia for past carrying costs. Next slide. Here are investment maturities by fiscal year. When we look at this in March, it's going to change significantly, because we do have an investment advisor, which right now we currently have about 80 to 90 million as through December that was invested with the investment advisors from Chandler Assets Under Management. That's about 120 million now. And a lot of the funds back in December were still in liquid accounts, but now they're being transitioned to more long-term investments. So we will, we've already seen a big change even through February. I think we were up about 3.9%, but we're anticipating a little bit better, a better look when we see this again in March. Next slide. This is the capital program through December. We had budgeted $75 million in our PAYGO, spent about $9.3 million through December in our CIP debt funded. We budgeted $41.9 million and have spent about $8.3 million. Next slide. On our operating expenditures of about $42 million, we were under budget by about 10%, which is $4.8 million of the $46.8 million budget. Talked a little bit about water quality treatment and maintenance being over budget, primarily due to treatment plant power costs. There are some regulatory fees that were incurred before the end of the year. In water resources, we were under budget by about 30%, which is about $1.4 million, primarily due to those conservation program expenses being less than expected due to lower program participation. and then source of supply under budget by about 12%, 762,000 due to core water supply payments. Those are paid twice a year in December and June. Next slide. And this is just our debt service graph of where we are today. We have made $23.5 million in payments of this year. Principal outstanding debt through December is $261 million, but that does exclude the Valencia Water Division acquisition loan and the 1999A accreted interest. Next slide. This is just the agency's cash position. We can see of the, all of the agency's cash, how it's split. We have we can allocate $113 million towards our reserves. Our restricted fund is about $111 million. That includes the retail and facility capacity fees, any state water project fund, and any remaining bond proceeds we have. And about $51 million is unrestricted, and that will meet the agency's payment obligations for operating expenses, including debt service, payroll expenses, insurance, PAYGO, CIP, et cetera. And then on the right-hand pie chart, you can just see of that $113 million of reserves, the breakdown. So majority of it is in that capital reserve. Next slide. So other items in this quarterly packet include the statement of revenues and expenses for the month of December. It has the detailed investment report. It has a three-month cash flow, the debt and cash position, which we just talked about, the facility capacity fee revenue, 10 largest disbursements from the check register, credit card register, director stipends, and director reimbursements. And that's my presentation. And the recommendation is that the Finance Administration Committee recommend the Board of Directors. Actually, we're not receiving and filing this. We are presenting this at the next board meeting. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Do we have any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
Thank you. Director Gutzeit, go ahead.
A couple quick questions. First of all, I do like this summary. I think it's good for the whole board. I think it's the appropriate level of detail. Interestingly, I saw a comment on the total revenues. I found it interesting. I like the colors. Because if I'm looking at it correctly, and I'm really trying to look at it correctly, our taxes dwarf water sales in terms of revenue, which is something I didn't look at before. But is that correct? Tax revenue dwarfs water sales?
Tax revenue is about half of water sales.
So the orange and gray boxes together, or it'd be our tax revenue. Water sales is the blue.
Which slide are you?
I'm looking at page 185 of the printed packet. Total revenues in millions.
Oh, yeah, that includes the state water contract. So these are the total total revenues. So when we're looking at the property tax is in gray. So that's about $30 million for the state water contract tax payments. And then the orange piece is the 1% property tax. So, yes, when you add those two together, it's it is very similar to, these are just our other revenues. This is,
it doesn't show water sales on it.
Well, water sales looks like it's pretty small, but right. That's not correct.
That's not correct. Okay. So is that chart's wrong?
I think the numbers are probably right. We just need to look at the colors on the side.
Okay. So maybe fix that, because I was like, wow, we we could just sit here on property tax and not do anything else and be doing okay. That was exaggerating with that. And then just our water sales are probably going to continue to be less than budgeted because of the tremendous rain. Would you say the water expenses will be down a similar amount as the sales, or do they not track?
They typically exactly. don't track dollar for dollar. And we, the December and January are our lowest budget allocations per year mm-hmm. because we anticipate that those months are only indoor water use anyway. Mm-hmm. So we may see a reduction because of the rain, but mm-hmm. it may not be as significant as if we got all of this rain in July.
Okay. And had we already accounted for the 15% conservation goal when we set the budget?
When we set the budget, it was based on a 5% because mm-hmm. we had already, so we didn't change the budget from our rate study. Mm-hmm. So we kept with the rate study with the revenues that we said we were going to generate. Mm-hmm. But we did have a calculation of if customers conserved that 15%, that we could still have enough money, okay. enough funds to cover that amount.
Okay. Because I remember we pretty much got the 15% by the fall, if it sticks. And lastly, I was curious about the solar issue that you mentioned it. What is going on exactly? And is it being fixed? Are the panels getting old, or is there some other thing that can be fixed?
Yeah, know some more about that.
A series of events. You may remember the wind and lightning induced damage that we had had.
I remember erosion. That's all but I remember.
That's a later one. And that hasn't done much to impact, I don't think, actual production. But we had some wind and lightning damage mm-hmm. shortly after we took ownership of the facility. And we were going through sort of the handoff and insurers between the legacy insurer and our insurance and what might be under warranty. We also had some delays just in terms of supply chain, getting new replacement parts for some of that damage. And then I think we had a second inverter or something that blew out. And so that, again, really took portions of it down. So we've been operating with kind of probably as low as 40% capacity and building, you know, back up to that full capacity okay. over the last year and a half. There's been a lot of work to try to get a steady, responsive maintenance contractor on board. And I think we've done that at this point, but there is still the catch up on things take longer to acquire. And we're in this odd space, and I imagine others are probably in this similar space where the resources are going to the big giant solar fields and the boutique solar that public agencies did back in the early pioneering days with the 1 megawatt project limit and then the 5 megawatt limit. We're having to kind of scramble to procure folks that can do that maintenance. So. Okay.
It's coming back, but just
slowly. Yeah, it's a work in progress. And I'll just say, I haven't double checked the math, but you remember that we got out of our PPA agreements because the rate we would have been paying for power was more than what we would have paid to Edison. Mm-hmm. So even though we're buying some from Edison, mm-hmm. we're probably paying less. Pretty sure we'd still be paying less than Edison rates, or we're paying less than we would have paid in the PPA if we'd stayed right. in. So. Okay. It's, but yeah, it's been a little vexing. And I know Matt Dickens has been working real hard with our ops folks to try to get all the resources on there. And then the erosion thing that you saw, yeah. though, I don't think that's affected too much on production.
Hopefully so. Not. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's it.
The dramaturge.
Thank you. So to piggyback off of what you just said, I'm wondering for the issue of the individual agencies may be having trouble with solar issues. Is there something maybe that either ACLA or CSDA can work on?
Yeah, I mean, we are contracting with their preferred provider, Terra Verde, to try to help us through that process of assessing and procuring, and they, you know, they've done a pretty good job for us. We had an initial contract that we let with a firm that just was not responsive, and we finally had to cut them loose. And I don't remember the name of the firm. I would shame them tonight. And I think they were having a hard time, you know, retaining staff. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily entirely your fault, but it was frustrating. And since we've switched, I think we've had better responsiveness. So.
Okay. I just mentioned it because if that's something you want me to bring to CSDA, we can talk about that, and I can talk to Chris Palmer about that.
Yeah, I think the question would be, is there any other resources? They have to be able to be on the ground in our, you know, in our region. So it kind of is, when you get down to hands-on maintenance, you're starting to have to go with what you can get in your area. So wouldn't hurt just to make sure we're not missing someone. I saw someone advertising at the Urban Water Conference as a project implementer, and that also gave me a similar thought to try to make sure that they're on our list.
Okay, thanks.
Thank
you for the presentation and the memo. You had actually answered a couple of my questions during your presentation, but I have one remaining one on the quarterly finance highlights. This is page 190 in the packet. Under water production and sales, it says total water produced for retail consumption October to December was 12,157 acre feet. And then total water sales was 13,814 acre feet. I'm trying to figure out what's the difference. Did we have some wholesale?
The difference just has to do with billing cycle. So when we looked at last quarter, it was flip-flopped kind of the other way.
Okay.
So we just, you know, all of our reports are based on billing cycle.
Okay.
And our production reports are based on actual dates.
Okay.
So there's always that small fluctuation.
Okay. And then lastly, just a comment. When I was looking at the 10 largest disbursements list, I was happy to see that it looks like a homeowners association took advantage of the lawn replacement program and got a nice hefty check back for that work. And so it was, are they the first HOA? Is Tesoro del Valle the first HOA to do that? Anybody know? You don't know.
I don't think so.
No. Okay. No. This is the first time I've noticed it and I've seen it. So I was just excited to see that. Wondering if we could do any social media around it to inspire others to do the same. That's it. Thank you.
Always a good job, Ms. Patterson. With that, we can move on to item 9, which is the planning committee or the committee planning calendar, which is provided in the package. You want to add anything more to that, Rochelle?
Not necessarily add. Make one potential change. So, you know, budget bonds, that's what's going to be, you know, coming up for us. Next month, we're going to be looking at the position control, which is the recommendation to add staff with the justifications and the budget and also the COLA. That kicks off a big part of the budget, so we know what to include in our budget expense-wise. The one change is for the chiller replacement, which is on the March calendar, which we are going to potentially have to move because there's a change of regulations starting next year. But the problem is the companies that make those chiller units, they will not be producing those units after March of this year. So they won't be taking any new orders because the new regulations start. And with the new regulations, they're not saying any new units won't be available till 2025. So we're in a little bit of a limbo of we can't order a new one. There's a possibility to retrofit the one we have. We have done an addendum to our RFP and extended the RFP to ask for recommendations from the companies that are bidding. And then I don't know, we may just have to limp along the chiller we have. It's not operating at capacity. One of the compressors is about 20%, and the other one I think is operational, but it seems to flip-flop all the time. And the biggest draw is summer. So we want to make sure we get through summer. We do have some contingency plans with some portable units and those types of things for some reason if that chiller goes down. But that will definitely be coming off of the March agenda, and we'll be probably looking at other alternatives. So that's all I have for the planning calendar.
Okay. Are there any public comment on the item?
No public comment at this time.
Thank you.
Second time I've heard about the chiller, so now I'm dying to know what is the regulatory change. Is it a Freon issue? Is it ammonia? What's going on?
It's with refrigerant.
So the
Freon refrigerant issue. We use now, they don't, I don't know. They, I guess they do manufacture it, but it's very expensive.
That's probably being phased out.
It's 22 something. Okay. And then there's the one that's like currently offered, which will probably be in the new units.
Mm-hmm.
But even the companies that like York, the big companies, they're not even quite sure how they're going to integrate the new regulations, which is why they're not saying that they're going to deliver any units until 2025.
Wow. Okay.
We were looking at, I don't know, I actually had this nice presentation. Shows our pictures of our existing chiller that was put in here in the 90s and what the new unit would look like. And it's an expandable unit, so it looks a little bit, it's definitely more updated. I don't know, for some reason, if we expanded this building, then we could just keep adding on to it. You wouldn't have to just replace with a full new unit. So it was expandable, it was more efficient, and unless we can get an order in by March 1st, then we're stuck waiting. So we were a little bit behind the deadline.
Air conditioning.
Yes.
Okay. I thought it was a water chiller, but.
Well, it does. I don't know the whole mechanics of a chiller, but it does have to do something with.
Okay.
There's a cooling.
Somebody else knows more about that than me.
All I know is periodically it sounds like the furnace in. That Christmas movie where the guy goes down in the basement, you know, I hear him in there banging away on it.
Well, we know we need something in September, right? We want something working in September. Thank you.
Okay, we can move on to requests for future agenda items. Are there any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
And then we'll end to the last item. Ms. Patterson?
I don't have anything for any additional items. I didn't prepare anything, but I will next time.
Is there any public comment?
No comment at this time.
Okay. Well, then we're to the last item. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to public comment on the adjournment.